And so the question is, are there contexts where what's sort of taken for granted, even if it's not legal, is one person confessing to a misdeed someone else did? See, a different Chinese case, which is really quite neat, is that one of the cases we look at is one where someone is killed and one of his parents confesses to doing the killing, was not the person who did the killing, but parents killing their children is a whole lot less illegal than anybody else killing their children. Children can be adult children. All right. The basic rule in Chinese, imperial Chinese law, is that if the child has seriously misbehaved, if he has, for example, insulted the parent, it is legal for the parent to kill him, because insulting the parent was a capital offense. And if the parent kills the child with no excuse at all, the parent is punished, but much less than the normal punishment for a killing.
All right.
So this is a case where apparently someone, for some, I think, I don't remember, it may even be a legitimate reason for killing the child. I don't remember the case, because there are lots of these cases where somebody is killed when he's trying to rob somebody or rape somebody or something like that. It's still illegal, generally. So there's at least one case where, I think it's the mother, I'm not sure, confesses to a killing she didn't do because her punishment is relatively light, if any, whereas the real person is serious. Yeah?
I think that it's going to be really hard to find a similar situation here simply because of how the system's set up, where it's up to the discretion of the district attorney who they charge. And I think a lot of times when they're going after someone big, they don't really have they have no interest in locking up a small-time crook from the same.
So we're getting the opposite side. What we're getting is somebody who is guilty being let off in exchange for his testifying against somebody who's considered more important than guilty.
Yeah, I mean, we see it throughout, you know, entertainment, and it's probably true in certain circumstances where they could take someone down for this crime, but they just hold off because they're trying to get higher and higher up the chain.
Yeah.
And I think because of that.
But what about the other side? Suppose the guy at the top of the chain has loyal subordinates. And the loyal subordinates say, no, he knew nothing about that killing. I just did it on my own.
Yeah. Well,
do we get real cases like that?
I think we would. It's just hard to tell because a lot of that stuff
yes.
stays secret.
Yeah.
But we see it in entertainment all the time. I think
see, the other place you might expect to see it, it occurs to me, if you think about tort law, you'd always prefer that it be somebody poor who is the tortfeasor because he can't pay the damages. You think of the opposite side, that one of the things one worries about in tort law is the search for deep pockets, that you sue not the person really responsible or the person you can get most money out of. But the flip side of that ought to be on the defense side, the search for shallow pockets, the attempt to somehow frame the facts so that the person who is legally liable is somebody who can't pay much damages and therefore there's no point suing him, or if you do, you won't get anything. And again, I'm not sure if I can think of cases of that. All right, it's just struck me as an interesting subject. However, since I think our first person still isn't here yet, why don't we change the order by having the Feigl paper first and then the Toothaker paper second. Do we have a Feigl in the room? Great. Feigl, sorry.
No.
Yes. Names are sort of fun in this country because we've got such a huge variety of ones which are from many different languages, and I frequently don't know how to pronounce them, but they're often entertaining. So you get 5 or 10 minutes if you want it to tell us about your paper, and then it's open season.
Okay.
Get my air away from your air.
Sorry. So I wrote on 3D printing. I focused mine more on the effects of patent law rather than IP in general. If you guys know what 3D printing is, I can do a brief thing of it. Basically, you layer. It takes like a CAD file of like your final object and slices it into layers and prints individual layers that build upon each other instead of starting with a block and chipping away at it until you get the final shape that you want. So right now, it's mostly used for prototypes and custom designs, and a lot of hobbyists are using it now, just home users, now that it's becoming a lot cheaper to buy printers or use services like Shapeways. You can send your CAD file off to them, and they'll print it for you. There's different ways to make the CAD file that underlies the printing. You can either make it on your own. There's also 3D scanners. You can scan a physical object, and it'll create a CAD file for you. Or you can just obtain one online from a CAD bank. And CAD files are nice because they're easy to modify, which is why 3D printing is so good for making prototypes, because you can do just a minor change in the design and print it right away instead of changing all the tooling necessary. So in the realm of patent infringement, there's direct liability and indirect liability. With direct liability, the people that are actually doing the printing and using the printed products will be directly liable if those infringe a patent. So usually that's going to be the home users printing from home. The larger companies that, like Shapeways, that do the printing for you, they will probably shift the liability in their terms and services to the individual users anyways. So they've already limited what liability they're exposed to. In terms of indirect infringement, patent holders would probably be looking at the CAD banks that host the CAD files that you can download. The main obstacle for patent owners is you have to prove knowledge in order to show that they were indirect infringers. And even with this, like, the CAD banks can still shift the burden to the users and tell them don't upload or download or do anything with infringing files, and so therefore they can just kind of turn away and say they don't know anything about the infringing patents. They're just hosting the content. So some of the main solutions that were proposed, the main one that I saw was DMCA patent corollary, the digital media for copyrights. Within that, there's a safe harbor provision, which provides a notice and takedown procedure and shields the hosting sites from liability for hosting infringing copyrighted works. So for me, I felt like this was extending it to the patent realm is unnecessary because all the protections that are afforded by the notice and takedown procedure and safe harbor provision are already contained within the patent scheme because of the knowledge requirement for indirect infringers. So a patentee can still notify the CAD banks and say, hey, your CAD file, if somebody prints it, is going to print an infringing product, and if that happens, we're going to come after you as an indirect infringer. So they already have a means of doing what the DMCA already is, DMCA required of, or with the safe harbor provision. And then I also talked about DRM software. That limits what files can be printed. So I felt like this was also an unworkable solution just because the only way to really have it be effective to prevent infringing across the board would be embedded in the printers themselves and only allow them to print authorized files. But then the question becomes, what files actually have valid authorization, and especially since home users are creating files themselves and there's easy ways to just scan a file or scan an object and create a CAD file, you'd have to basically prevent the home users from using it, and then it would be in the control of the bigger companies, and it would basically take away any benefits to the home users to use it. So then the solutions that I proposed was creating just a narrow innocent infringer provision, because the main liability being faced right now is by the home users because they can't shift the liability to anybody else. But then they're exposing themselves to a large degree of liability because they're the ones that the patentees can come after. So I said that patent law should require knowledge of the direct infringers also, so the people actually doing the printing and the using of the products. And so that would make it the same as indirect infringement. And then I said if they're not using it for a commercial purpose, then they shouldn't be liable for any use up to that point. Once they have knowledge, if they keep doing it, then the patentee can still go after them. And then if they're using it for a commercial purpose, then a court can balance the hardships. It would be an equity approach, because you wouldn't want to leave the simple home user at a severe disadvantage if they sold like two copies, but you're going to take away all their profits or leave them basically destitute. And then I also thought that online CAD banks should be required to provide conspicuous notices in plain English of the IP or in patent requirements and the potential liability that the users are facing. Right now, a lot of them are just including it in their terms and services, but it's on like some small link at the bottom of the page. Nobody's really going to look at it if they're not seeking it out. So one of my thoughts was requiring some sort of acknowledgement, whether it's a click to accept or something, before you upload or download any CAD files, just so that at least the users have more access to it and are more aware that they should be reading it. And then my other thought was keeping records, or that the CAD bank should keep records of the people who are uploading the files and have or obtain enough information to actually identify the people uploading the files. I focused on the people uploading the files because they're the ones disseminating the means to infringe versus the ones downloading. I feel like that's harder to go after, and also they're not the ones putting the work out there that enables the infringement. And that was it. Yeah.
Last thing you said, I was wondering, what if somebody downloads it and re-uploads it as a way to pay it back when they upload? So he has no idea who he has to upload the file.
So I think, I guess with keeping the records too, if you're uploading it also, then when they take the information, you could also put up, like, require them to read the notice of the IP, and they can decide not to re-upload it if they don't want to pay it back, you know? So even if they downloaded it from somebody else, maybe they aren't required to provide the records, but if they do want to re-upload it and share it with other people and allow other people to keep infringing, then I think that's where the problem arises. So they would provide their own information. If they don't know who it came from, then you can't say it, like, who it was. But, yeah, I didn't really think that much into that part, but I would consider that.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the same point. I guess even having that record there, would, I guess, have your confidence getting them in trouble?
So it would be the same reasons kind of that I was talking about the knowledge requirement. So they wouldn't be liable if they don't have knowledge of the existing patent just for uploading the CAD file. But if a patentee saw it and was like, we'd like to notify this individual person that uploaded it that we have this patent and that CAD file covers it so that they can stop uploading it to other sites also, then that was my thought behind it was... Yeah. So they wouldn't be necessarily in trouble, but it would be a means of contacting them and finding the person that's doing the uploading so that the patentee can tell them to stop uploading it to all these different sites. Yeah. It was a very rough draft, so I need to expand further on some of these
topics. So imagine that I have printed something that violates your patent.
Mm-hmm.
Whether by scanning something myself or by downloading it. How do you ever find out? In order for you to tell me, in your scheme, until I have knowledge, I'm not liable. In order for me to have knowledge, you've got to realize I've done it and tell me. How are you ever going to know that I have violated your patent?
So I think that's part of why I was focusing, at least with the records part, on the people doing the uploading. Because it will be easier to detect the indirect infringers at this point, and then with the direct infringement, the knowledge requirement would probably go more towards the commercial purposes. If you see them selling the products, that's how you would find them. So if somebody was 3D printing something and put it on Etsy and started selling that thing, you could find it and be like, oh no, that infringes my patent, and then contact them.
But we end up with the kind of world where it's a appliance that everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
I only need to make my own copies. You know,
yeah.
There's some object I want. I want six beautiful plates, so I buy one plate. I scan it, I print five more. How are you? Nobody's ever going to, plates aren't going to be copied.
Yeah,
I
was trying to think about that, and I couldn't really come up with a workable solution for how to identify that.
How, in more generally, let us suppose I've got an object and I scan it, mm-hmm. and I then upload it. How do I know that anything in that object is copied by patent? It's covered by patent. You think about the problems of infringement suits. It's not as, you know, a book, I know that an exact copy of a book is going to violate somebody's copyright unless I know the book is out of copyright. But a physical object, you've got a nice MacBook Air sitting in front of you. How do you know what patents are embedded in that object?
You don't. I actually had thought about including a provision in there, or a suggestion, but I didn't really know how to make it workable where you could create the CAD file or get the CAD file and send it off to a department somewhere, maybe like within the patent office. And
how would they find out?
Have them do a patent check.
How do they find out? The file doesn't say it's got patents in it. Is the way they find out to print out an object for every file anybody sends them and then somehow have an engineer look over that object and figure out what it does?
Yeah, I don't really know. That was part of why I cut that part out of my paper.
A whole bunch of practical problems that are interesting and which may make some of the legal solutions unworkable.
Yeah. And I haven't quite figured out the solution to that. But, yeah, I think it is, just difficult to figure out.
You're a patent holder, and you look at a archive, and this archive has got CAD files for 17,000 objects.
Mm-hmm.
How do you figure out which objects violate your patent?
Well, with the CAD file, too, though, I don't know that you'd necessarily even need to print out the physical object because the CAD file is a
description of the object.
Yeah.
Not a description of how it works. Not a description of why this piece is here.
No, but you can, at least for some things, you would be able to compare your product to the CAD file, just like you would compare it to a product out on the market.
Except that patents are not on objects.
Correct.
Patents are on ideas.
Yes.
So if the object is an exact copy of your object, and you know that your object is covered by patent, that might do it.
Yeah.
But if the object, suppose I take the CAD file for your object and I say, well, you know, that's a very nice object. It's got some really neat ideas in it. Let me do my version of it. I'm now producing an object that looks quite different, embeds your patented ideas, and I'm not sure how you're going to spot it unless I make enough of them so that I get visible and you then discover it.
Yeah. That's part of the problem. I don't quite know the solution to that.
Other people?
That's always a problem in patent law is anybody could use the ideas just for the first use. It's just going to become more pervasive with it being easier to do.
But if 3D printing, but it's equally true if you think about copyright law. It was always the case that anybody could take a book and handwrite a handwritten copy of it. Mm-hmm. It's just that was so costly that as a practical matter, it wasn't a serious threat to people. But even as late as say 1900, the setup costs for printing were large enough, so it didn't pay to do it unless you're doing a bunch of copies. Nowadays, the setup cost for printing, you've got your Xerox machine sitting in your office, you copy things off, or the setup cost for a computer file are even lower than that, and that introduces a new set of problems. So there's a sense in which the fact that if it becomes the case, now we can discuss, we probably want to discuss more, how close we're going to, sort of one, the extreme version of 3D printing is the point at which it's the equivalent of copying a computer file. We're very far from that for reasons I think we'll be discussing. But in that world, it's hard to see how you can enforce your patent law because each individual can produce stuff for himself. Right? Maybe there's some trick, but I'm not sure I see what it is.
Yeah, along those lines, I was thinking about whether it's related. That would be a problem because it seems like the technology of 3D printing will always lag behind, you know, national manufacturing plants that will be crazy. So we can't, I don't know how long we have to wait to have a smartphone from 3D printer. In that case, we're just really worried about patents that are technologically arguably relatively simple and not something that you don't really need a lot of setup to encourage the invention.
Yeah. Putting it differently, it's likely true for a long time that it's cheaper to produce things by not, by, to produce many, that if you're producing many copies of one thing, it's cheaper to do it with mass production rather than 3D printing. So the one interesting question is, if that stops being true, what happens? But that's probably not a very near, very short-term question. And then the question is, what things are being threatened? So let me put it differently. Suppose we have 3D printing at the level we now have it, but more people have it and it's cheaper. What kind of objects which have intellectual property in them would you be worried of being pirated? You're not worried they're going to pirate your MacBook Air. No way anyone has printed that one.
Yeah, I was trying to think about, if I had a 3D printer, what are the kinds of things I would be interested in printing? And for the most part, they're sort of little sort of trinket-based things. So there's like jewelry and things like that. There's bottle openers. Or there's a little, you know, figurines, like sort of small items. And those are the kinds of, maybe not jewelry, but those are the kinds of items that you expect to be produced rather cheaply in a large factory in China, or, you know. And so whether, if you could easily print those things yourself, I think you would. That's the, I mean, those are the kinds of things. But then my other, so then I was thinking, well, is there, instead of a legal solution to this problem, is there a market approach to this problem? Can you create a situation where there's some kind of subscription service that people want to sign up for that sort of incentivizes, maybe you gain access to a community, you gain access to a forum, they send you free samples, and it costs them a small amount of money, and then in exchange you get sent sort of professional quality licensed CAD files, where you gain access to a repository of files of that kind that you can use. And this sort of sidesteps the scanning problem, because you'd still be able to scan things that you actually had. But there'd be lots of things that maybe you don't happen to have, you know, a physical copy of on hand. And that file would still be really valuable. And someone might be willing to pay some sort of subscription or a one-time fee for that file, instead of just sort of making do with some amateur's copy, you know, or self-reproduced.
But in that system, how do you avoid the problem of the pirate archive? Suppose I have good contacts in some third world country that's got internet connections, and my contacts are good enough so that if American patent holders eventually hunt me down, I'll get warning and I can shut up shop and move somewhere else, you know, which doesn't take me very long. And so I set up an archive, and my archive is just like your archive. In fact, I got all my stuff from you because I was a subscriber to your service, and the difference is that I charge half as much and I charge it in some form of a digital payment or find some way of getting paid, isn't that going to undercut your scheme?
Well, I think that market's always going to be there. But if you can create a service that rewards a legitimate purchase, by creating an account or by some other means, you sort of encourage people, legitimate users, who are willing to pay for this stuff, as long as they can find it available. This is what's working right now, I think, in the music industry and other areas.
Yeah, the software is, in a sense, the closest equivalent.
Yeah.
See, a different thing that you might get, and I don't know how workable it is that one of the things you get in software is updates.
Yeah.
That, you know, every couple of weeks that machine of yours, just like its twin brother of mine, gets a message saying, download the latest update to Word and the latest update to OS X. Now, printing is going to be a little bit, for a while, a little more difficult. You can certainly imagine the point at which your object, we've got an improved version of your object, especially if you think about things like jewelry, where fashion, which is something which I think we've got somebody doing a paper on fashion, where fashion is something which changes a lot. So maybe some of the kinds of things you're describing are things where I want the latest version, and therefore part of what I'm getting is that not only do I get this lovely ring, but every 2 weeks, the ring changes to be the latest fashion, the version some film star was seen wearing, something like that. So those might be interesting possibilities. Other thoughts, either from you or from...
Yeah. I was wondering, we know that for a lot of things that can be pirated, some people can afford them and some people can't. The people who can't really afford them, they're not going to buy it if they can't get it pirated. So in a sense...
But aren't those also the people who are least likely to have 3D printers?
Right now. I guess I'm looking at way in the future.
Yeah.
Maybe in the early 90s you could see that same thing.
Yeah.
But not everybody has it.
Yep.
So At a certain point, there will be people who just can't really afford access to it. And then there are people who kind of going along with your subscription service idea. It's just more convenient to have the latest working file that we were like, the kinks have been worked out. And to not have to search, spend all this time searching around, like, okay, I finally found this. It's not, and it's the actual real thing. To have a subscription service where you can just go there, that saves you time. The people who value their time the most are those who are likely to be able to afford that subscription service and to be willing to pay for that. So they don't have to waste an hour or two and be all frustrated.
So you're saying you may have a world where the poor people are getting pirated products chiefly and the not poor people are getting authorized products at a higher price.
Right. So it's kind of a, it's like a price discrimination thing.
Yes. Except it's not exactly price discrimination because it's not delivered by the seller, but the effect is like price discrimination. Other? Over there?
I was just wondering if I could get a better understanding of how the raw materials required to print plays into this, and how, if you have a file, I assume you still have to have the right list of materials needed to print, and I just don't know how that aspect really would go.
So... Right now, like, the materials that are capable of being printed are just growing. Well, and actually, it's, like, a lot more now. There's plastics, there's metals. People are using it for pharmaceuticals now, too. So it's almost at this point you can print almost anything, but you do need the right materials to start with. So that could be a cost consideration, too, that as an individual buying the materials just for your home printing uses versus a larger manufacturer buying in bulk, probably going to be cheaper for them. But materials-wise, it's, and it would depend on the printer itself of what it's capable of, what materials it's capable of printing with. But,
yeah, I thought I heard someone concerned about people could make weapons or guns. So,
yeah, so that was...
Not could, can.
Yeah.
Can.
Yeah, I mean, so they make the...
It's not a very advanced gun, and I think people are naturally exaggerating a good deal. But apparently there is a design out there for a single-shot pistol, I think, made mostly out of plastic, which was put up there by somebody who doesn't like gun control and was making the point that it was really becoming technologically impossible to prevent people from having guns.
They print biological materials?
I can't remember. I feel like I did see something. I can't remember if it's happening already.
There are medical things.
Yeah, there's medical things, but
if you do things, I'm not sure if there's anything that's sort of in actual practice. All I understand is the people have demonstrated the ability to print some things like maybe replacement bone or I'm not sure it's bone or joints or that sort of thing. At least I'm not sure if they can do any. I'm not sure there's a way of doing anything living. Yeah.
They printed a bladder before to be replaced and put into.
Yeah.
Someone.
Made out of what?
Out of actual cells.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought I read something like that where they for actual like human body parts things can be printed. Yeah. But I can't remember. Yeah. Anybody? Or.
Can I just ask you a little bit more about why you think extending DMCA to patents is, I guess, unnecessary? Because, like, my understanding is that, I have the same topic. And so, like you, I've read so many papers suggesting being extended to patents. I just kind of don't understand the part about it doesn't. I understand that. So DMCA basically, I guess, provides notice to the infringer and also provides a safe harbor provision. And you're saying that.
So my thought behind it was that they don't really need the safe harbor provision. At least the CAD banks don't, which is who they'd be going after to do the taking down of the CAD files. Because they're not direct infringers just by hosting the files. They would only be liable as an indirect infringer under patent law. And under patent law, to be an indirect infringer, you need knowledge of the patent that's being infringed.
Okay.
So if they don't have knowledge of the patent, it doesn't matter that they're hosting it anyways. They can't come after them. But once you send a cease and desist letter or a notice of here's my patent that this CAD file is infringing, then you have the knowledge necessary and you can come after them. So it just seemed, to me anyways, under the existing patent framework, that everything that the safe harbor provision provided, they already have.
So I guess it works for copyright because I guess the ISP would have a copy?
Mm-hmm. That was my, yeah, and like, by displaying the copyrighted works, they're directly liable already, and there's not the knowledge requirement that's required of the indirect infringers in patent law. So that's why I was saying that it, you didn't need it. But
there's a different requirement for contributory infringement, though,
yeah.
And that is that what you're providing has no substantial non-infringing use. And I was wondering whether one could make an argument saying, well, look, one reason why somebody would download this file is in order to print out your object and make it. But another reason is if he's thinking of designing an object of his own, this object won't be infringing your patent, but it'll be borrowing other ideas from the... It's not like your patent covers your object. Your patent only covers your ideas. So you've got this lovely device which uses one of your patents. Someone else might want to make something that was largely a copy of that device not using your patent. Maybe he's got an alternative way of doing it. He wants to embed it. So he's downloading the file for that reason. Therefore, the CAD file has a substantial non-infringing use. Therefore, I'm not guilty of contributory infringement. Would that argument fly?
I think so. Yes. Probably.
Would you have that get copyright on the exact cat file that you
created? You're really limiting yourself to patent.
Yeah.
You. I'm just curious, right. Though, for what you're saying, would you have a copyright on your exact cat file?
If you create a CAD file, you have a copyright on it. But, of course, the person who created the CAD file isn't necessary. You don't have a... There is no copyright on this object.
Right.
So if I scan the object, I not having made it, and I then upload a CAD file, that CAD file is, I might have a copyright on it, but the only person who designed the object doesn't have a copy, unless he happens to have a design patent or something. But normally he doesn't. And if this object embeds three patents, which for all I know it does, I can still upload that file. I'm not making a copy of the object. I'm just making a derivative work, which is not covered under patent law because it isn't infringing. And then we're back with this the story about whether it has substantial non-infringing uses. Right. So I think, you know, copyright, we're going to get to copyright, I'm sure, but for a moment, you really wanted to specialize in the patent.
Yeah.
Sure.
I think it's similar to high speed internet. You say that, what's the point of high speed internet maybe most of these things, but copyright works. But I was thinking that I guess one difference is that it's so close to low-speed internet, or you can still send emails and so forth, and basic pictures, that it would be hard to kind of justify a lot, plus you've got the telecommunications industry probably lobbying against something like that, whereas 3D printer is so novel, and there's so little money that's been made so far based on it, that maybe you could just start there.
Other people, or?
For your innocent infringer argument, mm-hmm. What is the damages that a home user who prints off one copy of a patent design, what would those look like?
They'd probably be pretty nominal, I would say. And in general...
What's the basis for damage of your patent law?
Lost profits? Or,
yeah, go back and double check.
Royalty,
I think. Yeah, I think it's those.
So it'd be very small. There isn't an equivalent of the statutory damages in copyright?
Maybe one needs to be considered if the advent of the 3D printer, but at the moment, not really.
So if the penalty is just the $3.50 that I would have spent on the cup, then I go ahead and print it, because if I got sued, which I'm assuming wouldn't happen very often, I just paid in the amount I would have paid to buy the cup.
Yeah, probably. I'd have to look in more to how they calculate the damages and what else they get as damages. But, yeah, I feel like there would be some, it would be pretty nominal, which is, I think I may have mentioned it earlier in the paper, but I can't remember. But in general, the patentees aren't going to want to go over after the individuals. But because the damages just aren't worth it, some people, they might go after them just to make an example out of them. That would be mostly it. And then there's
not much of an example if it's nominal damage.
No, but then, and then so then the injury to the, I guess,
one way I could expand it is just the cost to the user or the person doing the home printing would also be the cost of the lawsuit in general. All the, like, litigation expenses, if they take it to litigation or just hiring a lawyer and stuff like that, that's going to raise the cost to the individual.
All right. Shall we have the next paper now? We've got our author. Our next paper is, I think, back here. Do we have another, what was supposed to be our first paper?
Oh, yeah.
There you are. You were somewhere around. Again, you've got 5 or 10 minutes if you want it to talk about the paper, and then it's all discussion.
Okay. My paper was similar to the last one, except I was focusing more generally on intellectual property. A lot of the issues are with copyright, for some of the reasons we mentioned earlier, with the indirect infringement. We tried to come up with some solutions that IP owners could use to try to protect their CAD files, and some of them we talked about already, such as a licensing scheme, which I think would be more effective than even the music and software industries and the movie industries, because users are more worried about viruses than they are about getting sued for copyright infringement. And some of those problems are compounded in the case of 3D printing, because the safety concerns for defective CAD files, if you're using unauthorized files, it could result in a defective product, which could also pose safety risks. And also, unlike copyright, downloading like a music or movie file, in this case, for 3D printing, you have to actually purchase the materials. And so if you're printing off defective copies and you're having to buy those materials over and over again, and those materials have to be physically printed and are physically bought and ordered from a store. So if you print off a defective copy, you might have to wait weeks in order to get that material to try again. Another strategy I think that the IP owners will probably pursue is going after Congress, similar to the DMCAA and the Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and similar acts that the movie industry, as far as going for statutory damages, like you mentioned earlier, in patent law there are no statutory damages, but owners of copyrights, like the CAD files, would have the statutory damages available, but the patent owners and other IP owners would probably be going after Congress to try to expand the statutory damages to cover everything related to 3D printing. Another idea I had was just kind of like the music and movie industries to raise awareness about patent infringement, because a lot of the likely infringement is likely to be home users, and a lot of people just don't know enough about patent and copyright and IP law generally to even know that what they're doing is infringing. So thinking maybe a public awareness campaign through the government or just individually by the IP owners could help reduce some innocent infringement. And another idea I had was perhaps a licensing scheme before you're allowed to purchase a 3D printer. It could be required that a user obtain a license that would allow the IP owners to kind of enforce the public awareness. And that way, if an infringer was found to be infringing an intellectual property by 3D printing, they could have their license revoked, which would kind of be a little bit more of a punishment, might help deter a little bit more infringement.
Do you think that's politically believable?
No, I don't think so. I think they require licenses for so few things that it's mainly just driving a car and...
And professions. And other than driving a car, it's not the only important thing. Well, I guess there's some areas where to own a firearm there are some kind of restrictions. But other than that, usually it's licenses for offering services, like the stuff that you people are going to have to be members of the bar and flower arranging and egg grading and yacht salesmen. There are a huge number of cases where professions require licenses, but it's hard to think of things that other than driving that ordinary people do for themselves that require licenses.
Yeah, it didn't really seem like a politically or administratively feasible solution. I really couldn't think of any solutions that would completely eliminate the infringement. Probably would have to rely on a mix of technical solutions like DRM for software. That again, that's pretty limited, like we were talking about, because of a user's ability to just scan an object. So it would be difficult to build in technical restrictions into the CAD files. Another strategy that I think IP owners could use, especially for service-intensive products, would be to include services like a warranty or updates, like we were talking about, for the authorized versions. But again, that solution is limited by the fact that not all products require a lot of services or updates. We haven't really come up with any surefire solution to eliminate everything.
Let me look at the other end of the problem. And the question is, can you really think of a significant number of products that it would be practical to 3D print with something not too far beyond current technology, which have a sizable IP value? Right? That is, it doesn't seem to me at all plausible that you'll be 3D printing computers or cell phones. So if you think about all of the stuff we've looked at over the course, can you think of any example of objects which might plausibly be done by 3D printing where there are people who care about protecting their intellectual property rights?
I know right now they're currently working on printing the body of a car. So I think Chevrolet and GMC have showed some concern that pirating the body of their cars could happen, which could kind of help kind of dilute the brand, because you don't necessarily have to have the quality inside parts. And if people are seeing the design of a car with, you know, bad inferior quality parts on the inside, it could help or it could harm their brand.
I point out that you are currently wearing the answer to the question I asked on your head.
Okay, yeah.
What do you have on your head?
A baseball hat.
And what do you know from one of the discussions in our book? It is that the baseball teams wish to maintain a monopoly over the right to license the production of baseball hats. Mm-hmm. And it would seem to me that a baseball hat is actually a simple enough object, so it would be quite straightforward, without violating anybody's copyright in the ordinary sense, for somebody who has a hat manufacturing, has a CAD for making a hat like that. Well, all they've got to do is to add to it any of the labels for all baseball teams and all football teams, and then often let you download it, right? So it seems to me that part of what strikes me as artificial about this whole discussion, and I think all of the papers and a lot of the public discussion, is overestimating the capability of the printers. That the current printers the home level printers are very slow. They are making, the home level printers are making stuff which are mostly plastic. They are quite limited in how complicated a machine they can make, and only something they can build up layer by layer. And my guess is that you have to look fairly hard, and that was the example that occurred to me, to find something where at anything close to the current technology, there is a serious threat. Although, in principle, if you imagine the sort of the full-blown version where at a low cost I can copy anything, which is sort of something that science fiction has had for a long time, then you have these very serious problems. It also occurred to me that insofar as it's a problem, it's not a new problem. What can you think of examples that have already existed, not with the 3D printing technology, where you have ways of reproducing physical objects?
I guess you could probably take a plastic or cast mold of something. If it's
Are you aware of the term plug mold statute? A Florida case... Bonito Boats, I think, is the case, if I remember correctly. Plug mold technology is, in fact, an older technology for doing this commercially. And the basic idea is that you have an object with a complicated three-dimensional structure, a three-dimensional appearance, but not a complicated internal structure. So the case in Bonito Boats was boat holes. It turns out that the physical shape of the hull of a boat, say a speedboat or something, is very complicated and affects performance a lot, so that you could have two boat holes that to you or I would look more or less identical, and one of them you will go faster with less power or whatever than the other. So what do? Somebody comes up with a really brilliant boat hole design. You buy one of his boats. You make a fiberglass mold out of his boat and use that to make new holes, and you sell those holes. And Florida, state of Florida, essentially made the equivalent of a copyright law to cover blood molds. And it was ruled that it infringed on the monopoly over intellectual property held by the federal government. So I believe that, if I remember correctly, and I read this a long time ago, I haven't reread it, but I believe that the Florida plug mold statute was found to be illegal, to be really whatever the proper term is for void, because it's not under their power. And I'm not sure, I think you may have eventually gotten a plug mold statute at the federal level, but I'm not sure. But boat holes are one example. Another example is spare parts for cars. So take something which 3D printing would also be useful for, which is the door handle brakes. And the door handle, if it's well designed, maybe is something you slide on and tighten a screw and it holds. Or pieces like that. And with the 3D printer, that's another area that might actually be quite useful. Imagine the case, in fact, I can give you a real case. My car has got luggage racks. The corner of the luggage rack has got a cover piece that screws on, which they charge money for, and which for some reason on one of my four corners keeps coming off. I think I've lost two of them at this point. Presumably, all I would have to do with a 3D printer is take one of the other ones, scan it, mirror image it in order that it'll fit on this side rather than this side, print it out. And I gather that there, in the case of the plug mold, that what I think was going on was that auto companies charged a price for spare parts that was way above production costs. And they could do that because they were the only source of that spare part. And it was costly enough for somebody else to tool up to produce it and produce an exact copy that it wasn't happening very much. But with plug mold technology, you could buy one spare part, use that to make the mold, and then sell replacement ones. And therefore, they were attempting to get laws against them. So that would be one example, which I think people who are all four of you who are doing the favorite ought to at least look at, where you have something rather like 3D printing that really was a real-world controversy, was something people were getting sued over, was something that at least one state, which is very interested in boats, was making statutes about and so forth. Yep?
Congress specifically enacted legislation to protect boat holes.
Right. Only boat holes?
Only boat holes, yeah.
So that you can still do it for replacement pieces for your Mercedes?
It is currently only limited to boat holes.
Right. Thank you. And that was after Bonita Boats
in
response.
It was as a result of that case.
Yeah, that was what I had a vague impression. Are there other examples? Anybody know anything about Mass Works Act? This is for the same thing for computer chips. And again, I don't know the details. It's stuff I read about a long time ago. But again, there were technologies where it cost a whole lot to make the first chip. And there were then relatively low-cost ways of making a copy of that chip. And they passed a law, the details of which I don't know, but you people could certainly look it up, called, I think, the Mass Works Act, which was an attempt to control that case. And the other examples about the essentially the equivalent of the photocopying of physical objects. Yeah? Were you going to?
No, I have to.
All right. Let me offer another one. And that is that there are people online who will print T-shirts for you. All right, I know about this because I had two copies, I think, made of a T-shirt of my design, one for my grandson and one for my son. And one, it says on the front, agent of entropy, and it says on the back, it's not just chaos, it's the law, which is a joke that physicists at least don't get. However, you could say that's covered by copyright, but it's also a physical object, right? The T-shirt is a physical object. And as far as I can tell, that sort of technology could be, take the simple case, suppose you've got a garment where what's distinctive about the garment is not how it's sewed, but its physical appearance, its color and stuff. Then given the existence of the technologies that were used for my T-shirts, presumably somebody could be pirating your garment. You could imagine that I get a picture of some movie star wearing your really latest fashion garment because it's got zebra stripes on it, and then I can send that to the equivalent of the T-shirt printers, and they can print off a copy for me. So you might think about whether that technology at this point already exists. I think that in general, one of the things that I don't think any of you really explored, and I thought would be one of the things that would be interesting to explore, would be where there already have been technologies that were the equivalent of cheaply copying physical objects and what happened to them. Yeah?
I was just going to say, do you think there's an analogy between telling someone that you have to license a 3D printer to telling someone you have to license a sewing machine? Because I know that comparison is made often online, but this is just sort of a three-dimensional sewing machine. Sewing machines can infringe. I don't think the United States protects fashion, but in many countries, fashion is a protected IP. Isn't this sort of a similar situation? And does that mean it's really not a problem? Like, there's always going to be, you know, a market for professional-level products. Assuming that it's closing, isn't really going to be closing?
I think just with a sewing machine is kind of limited mostly, I would think, to design infringement. And I think it's just more capability of a 3D printer to infringe more types of IP rights, like trademarks, copyrights, and patents. So I think it's an analogy, but I think the problem is probably more...
Has there been any litigation over cams for sewing machines? There are high-end sewing machines. You can put in a plastic thing which will then sew a particular pattern. It's basically fake embroidery. And some of those patterns might be the A for the whatever sports team you're wearing, or they might be something else that somebody had copyrighted or maybe even had a design patent on. Has there been any litigation where you have a design pattern on some particular pattern or something which is special in some way? And somebody makes a cam which you put into a popular sewing machine and let anybody who wants embroider that onto the garments he's making. Anybody know of any litigation? I don't. I'm just trying to sort of think up interesting things to add to your papers, which is part of my job as well as the job of everybody else in the room, of course. And it does seem to me that the whole area of physical reproduction in the past is going to be an area that people haven't thought about much and on to. Other examples people come up with? Different question, which I don't think anybody really discussed, and that's the limits of scanning. Suppose that you wanted to 3D print this, and imagine the 3D printers were good enough. How do you get the relevant information scanning it?
Yeah, it's one major limitation of the 3D scanning is it's pretty much limited to external.
So at the moment, that's a huge limitation, because after all, except for a design patent, the external is almost never patented.
Mm-hmm.
You think about where are there patented features in stuff that's out there, it's almost always how they work, and how they work is the internals of the mechanism, and the existing scanners aren't going to pick that up. So that means that you can infringe design patents, and you can infringe copyrights, but it's going to be relatively hard to infringe ordinary patents.
Through proof scanning, yeah.
So how do we solve that problem? Suppose we're on the other side. Suppose we're on the pro-pirate side. What are the technologies you might be looking at to give us something closer to the imagined science fiction world where we can reproduce everything? What do we currently have in the way of three-dimensional scanning? It does exist. What's it called?
Like MRIs and stuff?
That would be one example. I was thinking actually of tomography, but there X-ray tomography. People know about this. You might know about it because it's actually shown up in IP cases. X-ray tomography is basically getting a three-dimensional picture of the insides of you by running the X-ray at different angles. You think about it. Look, the way your vision works. Do you know how you know how it is that all of us have 3D vision? Except anybody who's missing an eye, I assume all you should have two eyes. 3D vision takes advantage of the fact that if this object is here, this eye is seeing it like this and this eye like that, whereas you over there, it's this way and this way. So the brain is essentially putting together the difference of the image from the two eyes and is using that to figure out how far away things are. All right? I think people with one eye can get some of the same effect by moving their head and sort of noticing how much, if I move my head, your head moves relative to the wall behind it because of the changing angle of the vision, and to some extent you can figure out how close you are, that the farther away, if your head was a little tiny head way, way farther off, it wouldn't be moving nearly as much as I moved my head. So X-ray tomography is doing the same principle with X-rays. So you're getting, and I think they refer to it as scans. I think there's some marketing term I think they're using for it now, but that's what it was called when they patented it. You could imagine, therefore, a fancier version of the scanner, which gets a three-dimensional, internal as well as external, picture of the object. Because I think I mentioned that I got a three-dimensional picture of my teeth taken in the course of the process for putting in the fake tooth that goes into your jawbone, so to speak. Now, that was at the outside of it. But if you were doing it with X-rays, you could in principle do it with the inside. So that's one limit. What other limits are there to the scanning technique? Just think about how far we are at present from the world that we're worrying about. So one step is you need something which can get three-dimensional picture of inside as well as outside, of everything inside, right? What else do we need in order to really be able to Xerox this or that? Or, yep? That's right. That's right. If you scan this, it'll tell you where it is, but it won't tell you what kind of plastic it is. And it may or may not even tell you whether it's plastic or metal or wood. Yep.
I think colors are also...
Well, color we can do, though. Cameras require color, right? Color is easy, but material is going to be hard. So another thing you would need, and I'm not quite sure how you would do it or whether it's doable, would be some form of scanner which will actually... Now, with none of that, of course, you could still imagine a version of this world minus the home scanning part. You can imagine a version where what actually happens is that some enterprising person in some country with smart people and not much enforcement of IP laws buys one of these, takes it apart, which people do, I mean, you see online where people disassemble things in order to see how they're made and such, and you don't have to get it the inside from outside, you can get the inside by disassembling it the way it was originally made, gets a complete description of it, turn that into a CAD file, and then put that up on the web. So it's worth distinguishing between the things that can be printed and the things that can be scanned and printed, because they aren't going to be the same thing. And some of the things that are going to be printed have never existed before that. Some of them is the designer creates it as a CAD file. But if you're worried about pirating things, some of them are going to be things where someone takes some object, goes to all the work of creating a CAD file to make it, and then puts that up online. So those, I think this is not just for you, since there are four different papers touching on this, but I think you should all be thinking among... Why don't I write it up just for...
You speak while I write.
Okay.
Would they have to be able to store different patterns? If you were thinking, you know, like Star Trek with the replicators, would they have to be able to store all some different kind of patterns or whatever it is, the database, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think, you know, with cloud, the recent cloud technology, you could probably get the printers to get hooked up to the internet, so that might not be as much of an issue. I'm not sure exactly how large these CAD files are. But if people are downloading them off the internet, then I would imagine it'd probably be a way to store them.
Those are more complicated things, and would you need more complicated?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand your question. Are you imagining that my 3D printer has got an archive of everything I ever want to print?
In the future, things that would need.
Why do I want to do that instead of just downloading the design for something when I want it?
Well, if you were talking about printing, the ability to like print more complicated things, wouldn't you need to have the ability to store like the data patterns for all?
For one thing, that is to say, somewhere it's got to be stored.
Yeah.
But you could imagine that on the internet, here's an archive which has got pirated versions of laptop computers, and there's an archive that's got pirated versions of something else, and I've got a really high-end 3D printer of 30 years from now, so I download my MacBook Air, except that's going to be antique by now, but whatever the equivalent is, and print it out. So I don't see why my machine has to store more than the design for one machine and for one object at a time, does it?
I mean, I'm just thinking, like, if you're talking about printing stuff, you know, like complicated things like organic materials and stuff on that level, or the physical quantum level, you would have to, it would be much more complicated pattern storage than you have for printing. That's
What you're really getting to, which is what I was going to raise at the end of this, but I'll get a little ahead of it, is the version of your story, which we've got, I think, one paper on, I believe, and which is going to be a more plausible version, and that's nanotechnology. Because nanotech looks as though it's got the potential eventually to be something much more like what you're describing. In the sense that everything is made out of atoms. It's easy enough to feed your machine a wide range of atoms, and it just assembles the atoms into whatever you like. So that's going to be something people, especially people who are doing things on nanotech, want to think about, whether in a certain odd way 3D printing isn't sort of a rehearsal for the issues that nanotechnology is going to raise. We'll talk about that more. But anyway, so things I was saying, what can scanning do is one question. Notice, by the way, that there are actually a number of different ways that that CAD file can come into existence. One of them is scanning, and that, I think, is only going to work, at least for a fair while, for fairly simple objects, for things like the door handle, maybe like a dish or a cup or something. Not only because the limits of materials, which I think are more limited than some of the papers they could suggest at this point, that, you know, the fact you can do a metal doesn't mean you can do all metals or all alloys of all metals or all alloys of all metals with all treatments on them. If you think about the difference between a temperate and untemperate steel, say, I think you're going to have serious limits there. But the other limit is what you can get the CAD file for. And very simple things, you scan it yourself. Another set of things, somebody somewhere simply designs it. Another set of things, somebody takes an actual object, disassembles it, and creates a CAD file for it. There's one other category you might think about, and that is you steal it from the manufacturer. That is to say, suppose what seems to me is not all that implausible, that 20 years from now, our home 3D printers are still limited. But a very common form of manufacture is essentially a giant 3D printer, which belongs to a company. Again, you talk about doing an auto body. You're not very likely to do an auto body at home. But if the way Apple is actually making these is with 3D printers, then just as you've got to worry with regard to movies about the fact that the movie may appear on the internet before it appears on the screen because some insider has leaked it, you may want to worry that somebody's going to get the file that Apple is using to print this, release that, at which point anybody else who has a machine capable of doing that printing can do it. So you still run into the question of the limits of the printer. But I guess part of what I'm suggesting is limits of what can scanning do, what can printing do. That those are two different limits that are worth thinking about, because what issues arise? That it seems to me that the present level really is at the same level as plug mold statutes, design t-shirts online, the A's wanting to be able to control the hat you're wearing, stuff like that, which I think is still fairly minor. And then the question is, as you get progress in the printers, what else happens? As you get progress in the scanners, what else? What happens when the scanning is not being done by the user but being done by somebody much more sophisticated in various ways and so forth? Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Sliding way back on your talk about the MRI, they actually can implement MRI's images into 3D printing and print it 3D.
What will an MRI tell you about materials? I was wondering if that would...
For example, I know right now there's companies that can actually print your entire skeleton. If you have a full body MRI, and they'll actually print your entire skeleton.
Out of what?
Out of whatever material you want to put out.
And you hang it up when you're...
Yeah, if you're a science teacher or whatever, that's probably what it's marked.
Or for Halloween, right.
Yeah.
What about... But I was thinking of a different question. Because as far as I can tell, X-ray tomography... I don't think there's any way it's going to tell you what the material is it's seeing. It'll tell you how transparent the material is. And maybe, I don't know enough. To what extent, if you're using different wavelengths of X-rays, could you distinguish different materials by how transparent they were at different frequencies? I don't know. But MRI, I wonder, does anybody know, well, can an MRI scan not only tell you what's there, but what it's made out of?
I don't know.
Anybody?
I think it tells you, like, how much, like, if it's, the signal that it gives you, like, information about how much water is there. It's like, so,
so is water mostly what MRI is picking up?
Picks up the hydrogen atoms.
Aha. Uh-huh. So hydrogen atoms aren't limited to water.
Yes. But I mean, but so that basically.
So does that mean that if you have a piece of metal in your body, it's going to be invisible to the MRI? No hydrogen in steel.
Yeah, you're supposed to take it off the.
Well, all right. Suppose to make it copper, make it silver, make it something that's not magnetic.
I don't know if it shows up.
All right. I don't know enough about MRI technology, but another thing that might be worth thinking about for someone of you who's really scientifically ambitious. Is what are the possibilities for much better scanners? In particular, are there known technologies which could be used to get a 3D scanner that told you not only what was there, what it was made out of? And I'm not sure what the answer to that question is, but if there are, that would be sort of an interesting feature of predicting the kind of world that we're going to have. Right?
I want to go to where we're talking about. It occurred to me that a lot of, I think, one strategy that copyright holders use to fight piracy is that there's quite a lot of dummy copies out there that look like it, you know, have their signals at the right timing and so forth. But then they're actually not the right copies, so you're spending a lot of time wasting looking for the right thing. And I wonder if you could take that a step further and let these players material just have something be followed. So that you have all these people having to print it out, spend the time in the materials, and then it just doesn't work, and they give up.
The version of this idea, which I've seen discussed in a different context, and I don't know whether it's true or not, is the idea that bomb-making instructions online are sometimes deliberately designed to blow up as a way of sabotaging people who want to blow other people up. And one of the things that I had wondered about, and I don't know if anybody has done it, and I'm not at all sure it's legal to do it, would be, suppose you're concerned about pirate archives online, and you say, well, I've got a solution to pirate archives online. I'm going to set up a pirate archive online, and it'll look just like all the others, except there are all these nice free viruses that people are giving away for nothing, and I will just infect all of the files that I have in my pirate archive with one virus or another, and people will download those, and then they'll have a real nuisance with their computers not working, and eventually they'll realize you just can't trust pirate archives online, therefore you've got to go to the authorized respectable producers. So I was wondering whether there was a sort of, I'm tempted to call it a poison pill, although that's usually used in a different context, but whether there is, first, whether it would work, because the counter argument is to say, well, there will be archives with a good reputation, which yours won't have, and the other possibility is, would it be illegal? This is really, there's a much more general issue, which I'm interested in about law in general, which is ways in which legal rules are privately enforced. All right. Have I told you the story about the guy who was waiting at home to hear who'd been stealing his firewood? Saw this somewhere. This, I don't know the true story. The story is, a fellow lives out in some rural area, and he's got a stack of firewood, and it keeps getting stolen. And so he puts up a fence, but the guy managed to get over the fence, and he does this and that. Nothing works. So finally, he takes a stick of firewood, he drills a hole in it, he inserts a stick of dynamite, he puts it back on the top of his stack of firewood, and he's sitting at home waiting to hear who's been stealing his firewood. All right. Makes sense. Is that legal? I think it is not legal. Right? Am I mistaken? Because that's a more extreme... Yep.
It's countermeasure. It's the same concept as the spring gun. If somebody breaks into your house, you can have a spring gun. When they open the door, you shoot them.
Uh-huh. The famous spring gun case in Montepeacock, actually, in England a while ago. Yeah, spring guns were a... You have a gun, I think, this would be a fair while back, so maybe a blunderbuss or something, which is sitting on a pivot with a string... The string's going out several places, so if somebody trips over the string, it swings the gun to fire down the string and pulls the trigger. and there was a case of somebody who is pursuing an escaped peacock into someone's garden and gets shot by the spring gun. And the court decided that the spring gun was unreasonably hazardous to people who were innocently trespassing, essentially. And I'm not sure if there are any things of that sort that count as legal at the moment, although I'm sure there are things of that sort people occasionally do. Yeah?
My favorite story of this is when game developers will put in their software some trigger or some so that when the game gets cracked, the release group releases a copy of the game, they only test the first 5 or 10 minutes, right, because they have to get it out as quickly as they can to beat all their competitors. And so they won't test this portion of the game, which is halfway through, where all of a sudden this unkillable monster appears or this door that won't open appears, and people who download the game then can't finish playing through the game. And the interesting thing is, a lot of times what happens is these people go online and they try to find help getting past this part. And, of course, then that identifies the fact that they're a pirate to all the other people who then condemn them and then, you know, throw insults at them and things like that. And it's an interesting way, you know, it's only temporarily effective, but for those first 48 hours, you've sort of stuck it to the pirates as a developer and encouraged people to go out and buy legitimate companies. So I think it's an interesting approximation of that thing.
But presumably, if all I do is to put up flawed copies, suppose I've got a book that I've got copyrighted, and I'm worried about pirates, and somewhere, so I upload to a pirate archive this long file which appears to be my book, but in fact, the first 20 pages are my book, and after that, it gets increasingly chunks of gibberish. So the person will go to the trouble of downloading. He thinks he's got the book, and then it gets worse and worse as he goes through it. My guess is there would be no legal problems with doing that. So an interesting question is sort of what are the limits of self-defense, as it were, that one could engage in along these lines? And that's an intriguing question to which I don't know the answer. All right. So I think we will have two more ones Thursday, and I hope that the rest of you who aren't doing these papers will be thinking up interesting things to ask and discuss, because it does seem to use a potentially interesting technology, and as I say, it's sort of a lead-in to nanotechnology, which is a much more interesting, threatening, promising technology than 3D printing.